to the future. It's weird because this podcast won't air until, see, the next one goes up on the 26th.
It's always Hello to the Future, Mike.
But it's like really, really future-y in this
case. It is slightly more in the future than normal.
So tell me, how was your trip to see your parents that you're taking next week? Tell me about that.
All right, so when people are listening to this, I'm back from my trip. It was probably boring because we're going to Florida, and unless you're
a lover of Florida,
unless you're below the age of 12 or above the age of, I'm going to say 70, Florida is a fucking boring place to be. It just is. I mean,
are you playing pad?
I'm not doing anything. You have my full and undivided attention.
Sorry,
I'm frazzled.
Yeah, I can tell you're frazzled. Your wife blew you in. I'm just sitting there reading my book like, oh, Mike's running a little late. He hasn't responded to any of my texts tonight.
I'm sorry. I'm frazzled. We're getting ready to go to Florida. It's something we don't really want. I think I touched on this last time.
Mm-hmm.
We're not super excited about it. But my parents are there, and we love my parents, so...
By Jove, you're going to see them.
We're going to go see them. But no, it's not an exciting thing. We don't go to... We went to, like, Epcot once, and it was meh.
Giant golf ball.
Yeah. Again, you know, not between the ages of 12 and 70. That large chunk most of Florida pretty dull.
I never really thought of it, but you're right. Florida has a very bad target audience range, right? You normally want it the other way around. It has the inverse of the ideal target
normally range. But it seems to work for them. So,
well, because they've got their target audiences.
So anyway, we're getting packed tonight and yada yada, and I got cut up and doing all that packing and prepping stuff,
and Diabloing.
I was taking a break. I'm not going to be able to play Diablo out there. I'm not bringing a gaming rig of any sort.
Bring your shield tablet.
I'm not going to play Diablo on that. Jeez.
Heaven forbid. My hack and slash has to be on a laptop.
I'm not playing Diablo without a keyboard and mouse. Sorry. Just not happening.
That would be really funny just to watch you on the plane.
I don't even know if I could stream it on the K1.
I've heard streaming is awful. No, actually, you can't stream outside of your own Wi-Fi network.
Okay.
Did you know that?
No.
Because I looked into a shield tablet.
Like your home Wi-Fi?
Yeah. Because it's weird. Really... Well, think about the bandwidth required to live stream a video game. Like, that you're playing.
Okay.
So that's, massive. And any jitter or anything is going to totally fuck it.
Right.
So they're like, yeah, it has to be your home network. So really, you know what it's for? I figured it out. Is your wife's making you watch, The Fucking Bachelor or something. So you're like, oh, I'm just going to play on the tablet while we sit here and watch this awful reality TV show. And then you're playing a computer game. For the record, my wife doesn't make me do that.
My wife doesn't make me do that either.
I'm just using that as an example of what I assume is the use case, because it's pretty stupid, is from what I can tell.
I don't know. There are very few games like that. I have the Shield, the K1 tablet, but I haven't even tried any of the streaming games on it.
I've heard their shit. Like, just pretty much, they suck.
It's got other things it does really well, mm-hmm. like actual Android games, and those run just peachy on it.
We are not at the technological point where streaming gaming makes sense, I think. Maybe with Li-Fi, we'll see how that works out. It's going to take a long time to get that right. Creepy as shit, too.
This drink is having a calming, soothing effect, though. This is pleasant.
Your shirt and your pants, weirdly
enough. I'm packing, okay?
No, but they match the lavender...
Oh, they do? All right. Yeah. Well, that was unintentional.
They might not actually be. There might be blue. I don't know. I'm going to stop looking at your pants because I'm just looking at your crotch. It's
I
weird.
Know, man. It's hard not to. Seeing as how it's on fire right now, metaphorically.
Oh, okay.
I'm saying I have a STD is what I'm trying to say.
Nah. No. See, if you were a witcher, you'd be immune to STDs.
What?
We talked about this a long time ago.
I think we're going to see The Witch. I think that's going to be the high point of this vacation. We're going to go out and see The Witch in a theater. What? You got a look on your face. I've heard a lot of good things about
it. I have no idea what you're talking about. I have no idea what The Witch is.
Oh, it's a movie.
I figured that.
It's getting a lot of critical and popular buzz. Supposed to be One of the best horror films to come out in a long time. So we've been burned by that before. You know.
Did you ever see the Shyamalan one that got good buzz?
What, the elevator or the visit? Not the thing with the grandma.
Yeah.
No, I didn't see that. Did you see it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll probably see it eventually.
I know it's apparently not bad, but it's just, it's Shyamalan.
I know.
But we've talked about me and horror movies. I dislike them because they tend to be very manipulative, and I don't appreciate that.
Well, all movies are manipulative to an extent.
I know, but I'm very cognizant of the manipulation.
Yeah. There's definitely a sense of like, it's like, come here. Watch what happens now.
Where?
Look, did you see that?
Loud noise. Yeah, that's why, again, the Japanese horror movies like fucked my shit up when I first saw them. Because they were so different, you know? But American horror movies, I don't know, I just feel I haven't enjoyed one in a long time.
Bah. Well, we'll let you know how The Witch goes.
Mm. Also just not a horror movie guy.
Speaking of movies that we've watched recently, we just watched Spy the other night.
That's right.
And we like giving little mini reviews to movies that have been out for a while.
Because you don't have to worry about spoilers.
No, I guess not. It was good.
Very funny. We've seen a couple of funny movies lately.
Yeah.
Melissa McCarthy. I was thinking about it. It's funny because in Bridesmaids was the first time I like really became aware of her. I think it was also Paul Feig. I think he directed that one too. And she was like not an ancillary character, but like a supporting character. And she was just insane. But it's funny that now she's carrying movies very well.
Well, that was like her breakout, right?
Yeah. But she played like she was like the female version of the Hangover movies, the crazy one.
What, Seth Rogen?
It's not the Hangover movies.
What? Okay.
You know, the guy with the beard.
She does strike me as kind of a female Seth Rogen, though. Nah, maybe not.
No.
I don't know.
No. Oh, my God. This is going to bug. He has Between Two Ferns. Zach Galifianakis. She's like female Zach Galifianakis.
No. She seems way more down to earth than Galifianakis. He's like, he's out there.
Did you see Bridesmaids?
No, I actually haven't seen Bridesmaids.
Okay, then shush. Okay. Let the people know what they're talking about.
All right. I'm going on what I saw in Spy.
And he can be very down to earth. He just has played strange characters in the past. But anyway, Spy was very good. She carried the movie well.
Yeah.
Again,
Jason Statham was great. He was over the top. Jason Statham, basically.
He was basically aping himself. It was very funny.
Yeah, good cast, good film.
Chummy, as my wife calls her, the British friend from Call the Midwife. That's how my wife knows her. She was funny.
Yes.
There's a lot of rodent jokes. Just an odd amount of rodent jokes.
Well, some interesting cameos.
Yeah.
50 Cent piece.
He had a couple. He popped up a couple times, yeah. Weirdly. I thought like he was a one-off joke. I'm like, oh, 50 Cent's still here. Serafinowicz, the Italian guy, Aldo.
Mm-hmm.
He, especially at the end, it was a great little scene at the end. He was great in that.
Yes.
So, have you seen the woman who played the villain? Have you seen her much?
I don't know.
Didn't she see Bridesmaids?
She looked familiar, so probably maybe something. But
she was the psycho in Wicker Park. I don't know if you saw that.
I haven't seen that.
Yeah, my wife and I are trying to figure out if she's really crazy or not. Because, like, I always think of her as the crazy chick from Wicker Park. And then I think, like, she's a bitchy character in Bridesmaids, and then she's a bitchy character in this. And it's like, she doesn't seem to have a lot of range that I'm aware of. Also, well, she's Australian.
All right, so there's nothing wrong with that.
There's potentially nothing right with it either.
Now, come on, you're an actor. You can't fall into that trap of thinking somebody is like the characters they play.
I absolutely can fall into that trap.
No.
I have yet to say anything to the contrary.
What?
In her case.
You've only seen her performing. You haven't seen her like in an interview or anything, have you?
Oh, interviews acting.
Oh, my God. This drink, though, this is...
This is not pretending to be anything other than delicious.
I'm not pretending or acting like I'm enjoying this. This is another one of my quickie, cheapy cocktails.
Maybe artisanal
not,
soda?
Not cheapy, but definitely quickie, low-effort cocktails.
Yeah, but that's sometimes the best.
Yeah, keeping it simple. This is going back to my ethereal gin, which there's not much left. It's becoming more and more ethereal as it goes. And no, that is okay.
Yeah.
No.
Nice try though.
Yeah.
Don't make me bring up the cheese fountain.
Oh, Jesus. Nobody wants to hear that again. And,
but it was ethereal.
And
they, right?
Yeah, it's the ethereal gin and the same dry soda that did the dry blood orange. And I think we've had another, like, a dry vanilla from them. This is a dry lavender soda. So just the two things, the lavender soda and the ethereal gin.
A very floral soda, a very floral gin.
Yeah.
Floral gin.
A light floral gin. Mm-hmm. So it's a nice flowery, calming, soothing drink.
Mm-hmm. To go with your flowery, calming,
yes,
packing clothing.
Yes, to go with me being frazzled about packing and getting ready to go.
From the rooftop, shattered out. Bow, 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 bow. So we watched The Hateful Eight recently.
You did. All, what, 2.5? More than two and
two
a half hours?
2 hours and 52 minutes.
All right, so 3 hours.
So 3 hours. And the reason I'm mentioning that is because we also had Miracle Berry pills that night.
To keep you awake?
No.
What?
No, I'll get to that in a second. But Hateful Eight, enjoyable, very long.
But worth it?
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
Okay.
It's
not
Tarantino's best
me
movie. Like, I didn't get excited like Kill Bill or anything, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of, I don't know, Erica, who knows a lot more about older movies than me, said that it was a perfect homage to, like, 70s movies. So
okay.
They did insanely long takes and stuff that you don't really see a lot anymore. So in that, like...
And it was Jennifer Jason Leigh, is that?
I think so. I think it's Jennifer Jason Leigh.
Okay.
She did a really good job.
She usually does.
Did you hear about the big controversy with the movie, with the guitar?
No. I've heard that there are other controversies, mainly centered around Tarantino.
There's always controversies
centered
around Tarantino. So this apparently was a complete accident. So, spoiler, stop listening for the next 20 seconds.
All right. Me?
No.
Because I haven't seen it.
They smash a guitar in a scene.
Okay.
I just ruined the movie for you. So the thing is, it was an antique, like, 100-year-old guitar that they had borrowed as a prop. And the idea was that they were going, she strums on it. And then, oh my God, Snake Plissken. Kurt Russell.
Yes.
Kurt Russell smashes the guitar. So for some reason, no one told him that they were going to swap the guitar out. So he, like, gets mad at her and he smashes the guitar. And she, like, gasps. And I remember thinking when I saw it, I was like, wow, that was a really strong reaction. I guess she was the only one in the scene. He was the only one in the scene who didn't know that he had just smashed, like, basically a priceless piece of Americana. And then, like, the production company lied to the museum. And they were like, oh, it got destroyed in an accident on set. And then, like, you see in the movie, and the museum's like, kind of hard to ignore this. So needless to say, we're not lending you anything ever again.
Ah, I guess so. What was it? Obviously not on the same scale, but didn't something similar happen in Battlestar Galactica? When Adama, like, smashes a model he'd been working on or something.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Okay, it's been a while since you've seen it.
Yeah, I was watching it for the last half of the show, actually, live, like, when it was on, so.
All right. Well, supposedly there's some scene where he's, like, he'd been working on this model for a long time. And then he just ends up smashing it in one scene.
Okay.
And I don't think it was initially intended to go down like that.
But it was something he'd actually been building?
I think so. I don't know. I'm reaching here.
Yeah, really reaching.
There is something to that, sort of related. So,
I got your A to C.
So Google it. Whatever.
I got your A to C. I'm picking it up. So Miracle Berries. So Justin came over. He had brought.
Are these legal?
Berries. Oh yeah.
Okay. I didn't want you to.
They're
implicate
the things
yourself.
That change your taste buds, like invert taste buds.
What?
So
this
the
doesn't
story,
sound like a good idea.
No, it's awesome. So the story is that there were some anthropologists in, like, I'm going to say Papua New Guinea because I don't fucking know where they were. But some, like, exotic locale. And they were,
South,
like,
America? We're talking South America?
Maybe. Maybe it was Africa. I don't know. Some, like, hot place where they were studying a very remote tribe. And the tribe was eating, like, basically bad, like, bread. Bread that was impossibly old to eat.
Oh.
And they were not complaining at all. And the anthropologist was like, how are you doing this? And they're like, oh, we just eat these berries. And then everything tastes fine. And the anthropologist was like, what?
This doesn't seem like a good idea.
In their case, probably not.
Food that doesn't taste bad shouldn't be eaten generally speaking.
Food that does taste bad.
That does taste bad, yeah.
Right.
It's food that tastes bad when you get that reaction.
That's nature's way of saying,
exactly.
Yeah.
Don't
no,
eat
I get
that.
It. But bread, it's a little, I don't know. But the cool thing is that so they turn sour sweet and sweet sour, and they kind of invert a lot of stuff.
All right.
So what we did was he bought like a bunch of lemons and limes.
Okay.
And some like really bitter beer. And it's a couple like some dark chocolate, like stuff that we wouldn't normally like. Oh, and we did shots of apple cider vinegar too. So
Of just the vinegar?
Yeah. I mean, I can do that without a problem, but obviously that's a lot for other people.
Yeah.
I drink it every day. But so we just cut up lime wedges and eating, like, you eat them like fruit, the fruit that they are, because the more sour it is, the sweeter it tastes.
Uh-huh.
So it was like eating.
So it was like candy almost.
Yeah. And I chewed the damn thing. You're not supposed to chew. You're supposed to let it very slowly dissolve in your tongue for like 20 minutes. And of course, I'm like, oh, shit. So now I was trying to shove everything in my mouth before I lost it.
But so yeah. It wears off quickly?
Not really. I think it lasts longer if you do it right, where you melt it on your tongue so it has a more lasting effect. But I still was able to, like, bitter beer tasted kind of tangy, which was not great. But it was interesting. Right. It was interesting because you're like, you're not drunk or anything, so you're like, oh, okay, this is strange.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you're just eating lemons, like, on some level you know they're sour because your mouth is still reacting to it.
Yeah.
But they taste great. They taste like candy, and you're like, mm-hmm. You have lemon and lime. Nom, 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 nom. The apple cider vinegar still burns, but everything else about it is a lot mellowed, so they can't invert everything, but it mellows some things.
That is pretty cool.
Yeah. You can get them, you can order them from the internet. They come in pill form, so they distill the berry, they powder the berry and put it into a capsule.
Huh.
But yeah, you can just order it, I don't know, probably on Amazon.
All right. I'll have to try that.
Miracle berries.
Miracle berries.
Miracle berries. Helping people in maybe Papua New Guinea eat shitty bread for, I don't know, a couple years, a couple centuries. I don't fucking know. I didn't research the story at all. I kind of half remember it.
You just researched the berries.
I researched
by trying them
and reading the back. Hands-on research. I like read the back of the little blurb on the packet.
And of course, that's going to be legit.
100% accurate every time.
Anything you read on a packet on the back of something that you buy on the internet
that is a drug of some kind.
Yeah, that's some sort of legal over the counter non Czechoslovakian regulated drug.
And then it
quote,
said,
drug quote.
Those anthropologists went on to find King Solomon's Mines, too. Totally legit. What was King Solomon's Mines?
I don't know.
Where were they?
Wasn't that a movie? I mean, that was a movie.
Yeah, but it was like a book before that, right? It was an old adventure book.
Yeah.
I only know that because of League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Yeah.
Because it was King. It was Alan Quatermain. It was Alan Quatermain.
Quatermain, right, okay.
King Solomon's Mines, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Did you ever read League of Extraordinary Gentlemen?
Yes. I don't know if I read all of it, or all of them.
Don't bother with the movie, but the book...
I've seen the movie. It was, eh.
It's a horrible way for Sean Connery to go out. What a shitty last movie.
That was really his last movie?
Yeah. That's on par with Raul Julia doing M. Bison as his last role. Did he do that because of kids or grandkids or something? I hope. I hope so. I hope that was the reasoning.
I hope that his heart was in it because of that.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
It's a moment of silence for Raul Julia's final career choice.
Wow. Well, now I'm bummed out.
No, sorry.
Wait, let's just bum people out. Let's just start bumming people out.
All right.
So
who died lately?
A bunch of people in Kalamazoo, Michigan.
Yeah. Jason.
Crazy Uber driver guy.
Jason's, our producer, has his wife or girlfriend, his family were there.
But not hurt. Oh.
I guess. Yeah. I haven't gotten the full story yet, but.
Wow.
Yeah. That's fucking shitty as hell.
Yeah. That's awful. That's something that I'm sure Uber needed too.
Well, I mean, God, they're unstoppable. What? So, I haven't read it. I only know that there was a shooting in Kalamazoo. It was the first time
he shot, I think, at least 8 people. He killed 6 people, injured at least 2 others.
So these weren't passengers. These were
no, just... they weren't the passengers. And during this shooting spree, he was taking fares around. So he would pick up a fare, drop them off, and then go shoot someone, and then pick up another fare. No.
Oh, weird.
But he was driving like really crazy, apparently.
Okay.
And it was like, you know, crazy taxi.
You don't normally hear that in as literal.
Yeah. It was like that.
Wow.
And one of his fares, I think, actually contacted the police and said, "This guy's driving like a maniac. I'm concerned he's gonna, you know, hurt somebody."
Oh wait.
Yeah. And I don't think the cops actually acted on that particular tip.
Yeah, but they were probably chasing all, you know, the fact that there was a shooter on the loose.
I don't know. Yeah, I'm not sure how it went down, but it was a mess. And it's awful and it's tragic. And I mean, as awful and tragic as it is, there's still, I feel awful for saying this, but I will say it, that it's just, it's the society we live in. We have lots of guns. We have easy access to guns. This sort of shit will happen. It'll continue to happen. I don't think any amount of additional regulations or having extended waiting periods or, you know, whatever like that, I don't think it's really going to have any effect on this stuff. It's just, it is the price we pay for having a heavily armed society. And at the end, I just kind of shake my head and shrug.
So, all right, we're on this path. It's
all right.
It's timely right now, although by the time this post, it will be slightly less timely. But so I saw a statistic that might have come from Michael Moore that there are basically as many guns in Canada as there are here. And they don't have anything close to the number of shootings. So I actually disagree. I don't. If that's true, I don't think it's guns. I think it's a plethora of other factors, not the least of which is media sensationalism. Because if you're a mentally disturbed person, you can basically count on, because you know this guy's life story is going to be plastered all over the news. His reasons why, his mantra, any affiliations he may or may not have. I'm not going to assume anything. Although right now it's really easy to assume one particular group is behind it in some way. But
I'm not assuming. I'm not assuming any group other than his own deranged mental state is behind this.
Well, I mean, it was whatever demon hierarchy was in that city, right? Based on the other Uber driver that I had. But no, I genuinely think if we reacted as a nation and as the media outlets differently to this kind of thing, and we didn't put it everywhere for the world to see that this person gets their 15 minutes of fame, sometimes posthumously, sometimes not. I think if we handled mental illness a little bit differently in this country, I don't see the guns as, I don't want to sound like that guy. The guns are a problem because no one fucking needs that many guns. It's just apeshit bananas to me, right? That there's that many guns. But we've proven, we know that other countries have about as many guns and don't go crazy as often as we do. So there has to be more to it than that. So I feel like it's something else.
Okay.
And I'm not sure if, I'm starting to get this theory that our country is just, it's been too, things have been too good for too long and it's just starting to fucking corrode. There's like a diseased mind now, like just a, like the zeitgeist.
Too good for too long?
I don't know what's up with this country. I don't fucking get it.
Well, I mean, are we comparing it to Canada? Because Canada seems like they've been doing pretty good for a good long while. Did I just curse Canada by throwing that out?
I don't think you can curse Canada. I think they're like, we're Canada, eh? I mean, what? No, I think we're high on our own fumes.
All right. Well, what do you do then?
Oh God, where do you begin?
That's a good. I mean, that's my question. Then, what can that gin even be put back in the bottle?
So here's where I'll get to that. But I will say that when people like you, when people like my friend Ben, say things like, "Oh, I can't believe you would want to have kids," or "Don't you worry about kids in the future," it's funny because it's a common thing. I think that we're fucked beyond repair. So this is why I don't care that much about the state of the country, because I don't think it can be fixed. I genuinely don't. And so my main aim is to like try to provide a life for my kid where they grow up okay enough where they can live by their wits. That's genuinely, I'm not even joking.
Like I don't think you are. I'm
I have so little,
I'm not even arguing with that.
I know, you're not. I have so little hope for this country. So where do we begin? It begins with the political system. All right, we need to stop. Because things can't change. So to answer your question, things can't change until they're allowed to change from the top down. And we have a system that basically impedes change because it's a business. Yes. So you have to start there. So I don't know, fucking gut the entire governmental system and start over. I mean, how crazy does that sound?
Depends on who you ask. To me, it actually sounds pretty reasonable. It sounds reasonable as in it would be a good thing to do,
not
as in it's possible doable. To do this, yes.
Because the system that would be gutted, the reason you're gutting it is because it is a system in which intransigence is so fucking ingrained. I mean, what is the average age of a politician? Seriously.
It's up there?
It's up there.
But yeah, there's so much wrong. If you really want to get bummed out.
Well, I think we're on that track, so let's just get go.
What's that, the show Adam Ruins Everything? Have you seen any of it?
Yes, related to salaries and discussing salaries.
Oh, really? It's a pretty good show. Mm-hmm. I definitely recommend it. The one on politics is especially depressing. And one of the... you could just pick any issue you want, but one of the most striking things that he calls out, in which, you know, it's an obvious thing, but people just sort of go along with it now, mm-hmm. is gerrymandering, which is it's insane that it's ever been allowed to happen.
Well, explain it.
Okay, so say you have, we'll say a state, mm-hmm. which is say 30% one
ethnicity.
Political party.
Oh, okay.
The tendency for the population is for 30% to vote, we'll say, Democrat, and 70% to vote Republican.
Okay.
Now, what did I say, 30% Democrat? Mm-hmm. Okay, so the Democrats are like, at some point they get in control, somewhere in the past, and yeah, because it's possible somehow.
Legally. To redraw...
And districts get redrawn such that...
The district lines.
So you can end up with maybe two or three districts chopped out of this that will vote Democrat, and maybe two other districts that will vote Republican.
Because of the way so you now proportionalize...
You
have,
yes, you proportionalized it and made these fucked up imaginary lines...
They're completely arbitrary.
Yeah, they're arbitrary, except for the sense that they're meant specifically to do this.
Right.
That you now have half of the state districts Democrat and half of them Republican.
Despite the fact
that I'm just making arbitrary, you know, I'm not indicting one party or another because everyone does.
Oh yeah,
this.
Everyone does it. No, and it's been like that for a long time.
So you end up with election results that don't truly reflect what the popular vote is. Of a given state.
Which has been one of the most egregious violations of trust for a very long time, is that the way that the nation votes...
Yes.
...isn't reflected in the the political system very well.
Yes.
On a fairly large scale.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I could get into this more, but just go watch that.
Adam Ruins Everything. It's very... I mean, just from what I've seen, it's very good. And then there's... So, I know that the Republicans are a big fan of threatening to filibuster... And is it just me?
Whoever's not in the majority is always threatening to filibuster.
Okay, but aren't the Republicans notorious for threatening and then never actually doing it, but the Democrats just cave and they're like, oh, they're going to filibuster, we got to give in. Am I understanding that right?
That happens, yeah. And it's really just, it's like I'm elevating it way more than it should be, but it's kind of like a chess game. Where you look at what the other person is going to do. You know, if I do this, they're going to do this. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to do that.
Right.
So you just have to come up with something else because you're like, that move leads to their move, which leads to this move for me, which leads to them doing this. And
okay, but
wants
let me just ask a question that no one seems to want to answer. What's so bad about being stuck in a filibuster?
It just stops. Nothing happens.
Okay. What is the government actually accomplishing normally? Seriously. How many, I mean, isn't the amount of days that Congress is in session, like, doesn't it, like, shorten every time there's a new term election? Like, they just keep giving themselves more time off?
I don't know.
I mean, probably. But is the filibuster the one where they just talk, they're just supposed to just constantly talk? Is that the filibuster?
Yeah, it's everybody talks, and it really prevents a vote from getting made.
Right, but no one's, like, genuinely filibustered for 48 hours in, like, 100 years, right?
I don't know.
I mean, that used to be, like, a thing that... old school politicians did back when people who actually should be in politics were in politics.
Yeah, but it can be done.
Okay. I would say big cup of coffee, which in turn becomes a large thing to piss in. Comfy cushion, right? Maybe some, like a heated blanket. I figured the room's probably cold. Fucking go at it, man. I'll listen to you talk. Turn off my... I probably can't have your cell phone in Congress, so shit. I just get the disconnect, man. Jesus, what are people so afraid of? You know what it is? This is the problem with having old politicians. They're afraid they're going to die during a filibuster.
That's a legit concern.
We all remember what Strom Thurmond looked like.
Oh, my God. Strom Thurmond.
I'm just saying that last time I checked, the filibuster did not sound that scary. Yeah, people act like it's like Godzilla attacking.
The greater problem in this is, I feel like I'm just ranting now.
No one listens to our podcast. You can do whatever the fuck you want, dude.
The biggest problem is it's a two-party system. There's like maybe two or three independents in anywhere in the Senate.
And how many times have they ever been taken seriously?
Yeah, nobody gives a shit. Yeah. And it's two parties that are roughly on even footing. It's not 50-50, but it's bit. Close.
Yeah, yeah. And it shifts a little bit. Too.
But they're in such a close proportion now, and they have been for a while, that it's very easy for them to just cancel each other out.
Mm-hmm. And that there's really nothing left in that instance.
Yeah, there's not much left. In other countries where they don't have just two parties, and I know I'm going to botch this up because I don't know enough about it. I know enough to be dangerous, I guess. In this. So take all this as a big grain of salt and go research it on Google for
yourself.
Nothing
you are hearing in this podcast should be taken as completely accurate, except the Miracle Berry stuff. They did find King Solomon's mines.
But the UK, for example.
I know you're going to bring up the UK, yeah.
Yeah. They have multiple, more than two parties.
Whigs, Tories, and those are the only two I can name.
Labour.
Labour.
Yeah. Whatever.
That's three. We named three. High five.
The Hooties. I don't know.
And the Blowfishes.
So when they have their elections, they actually get a proportion based on how the proportion of the vote they get.
Right.
So if 30% of the people vote Whig, then you get 30% Whigs in whatever the House is there.
Mm-hmm.
So it actually matters who you vote for one thing.
Well, yeah, the minute you feel empowered to, like, actually have a voice in the government, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a pretty powerful thing.
So even if you're, like, in this state, if you're voting for a general election and you're, well, it doesn't even matter. In a presidential election, we vote for a Democrat here.
Which is hilarious. Which is always so funny to me because I'm always happy about that. But that's really, like, the lower part of the state swinging a fairly large part of the state against its normal, because most of New York State is conservative.
Yes.
We live in a fairly conservative
area. Yeah, we do.
Is weird.
It is weird.
Because you think in New York and you're like, oh, well, Democrat, I'm a liberal. But it's like, no, that's just New York City that happens to have the population density of most of the state.
Yes.
That's not even true, actually. I guess there's just enough city, others like Albany and...
Yes. And most urban populations, most urban concentrated centers tend to vote Democrat.
I bet Dallas doesn't.
I don't know.
Austin definitely does, but I don't think Dallas does.
Anyway, what was I saying?
Whigs,
yeah, Tories. So, for example, it doesn't matter who any single person votes for in a presidential election here.
Right.
Because it's going to be a Democrat that wins the state.
In the state. And in the country, it doesn't matter because your vote is ultimately subsumed by the Electoral College, who can cast a cursory glance at what the popular vote was and then say, eh.
And it gets worse and worse. But yeah, in other countries, your vote has more of an impact.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's certainly part of the problem here.
What we're identifying in a systemic sense is a disconnect. We live in a country where the standard of living is pretty great unless you're poor.
Yeah.
In which case, it is not pretty great, but no one really talks about it once you get to, like, middle class. Even like, lower middle class, you're like, I'm not poor, so I don't really care about the poor.
Yeah.
Having grown up poor, I was just saying to my wife yesterday, I'm like, I don't remember what it was like to be poor at this point. Like, I grew up dirt fucking poor. Like, we weren't sure we were going to have meals sometimes. Like, it was that bad. And then, like, you look at where I am now, and it's like, I don't remember... You know, like, it's been long enough that it's kind of hard for me to remember what it was like.
Yeah.
But there's a disconnect.
We're really good at blaming the poor for being poor.
Oh, my God. So good at it. They're a fucking great scapegoat. You can keep paying them shitty. right? Yeah. And just ground them under the boot heel. And what are they going to do?
We keep, you know, we raise minimum wage a little bit. Keep knocking up a little bit.
Yeah,
little
and then bit. Mother and them, we don't help out with daycare enough, so mothers are leaving their kids in parks while they're working at McDonald's.
Well, it's their fault for becoming a mother. Jeez.
It's only an inalienable right.
Yes, but yeah, we're great at blaming people for their own plight, even though that plight is largely determined by a busted and biased system.
That requires, I think it's like, I used to know the figure, I think it's a 30% population size needs to be poverty class to function the way it does.
What?
No, think
this
about
is
it.
News to me. I'm not arguing.
This is the sociology coming back, and it's been fucking 12 years. So, and I was a lot closer to being poor back then, so I paid more attention, and now I'm like, well, life's not bad, so do I really care? But no, it's you absolutely, this country will not function without a significant, not majority, but a significant amount of the population being at like poverty level. Because no one in the middle class is going to do some of the stuff that a poverty level person is willing to do in terms of occupation.
Because we need custodians and Burger King workers and
that are paid what they are. If we lived in a world or we lived in a country that paid you based on how shitty the job was, which when you think about it is really how it should be,
yeah.
Right? Middle managers should get paid shit. Right? And the people on the front lines of any job should be paid a lot more. In that case, then you'd see people who are CEOs right now fighting to be custodial engineers. But yeah, so to have...
Yeah, and it is a little bit ridiculous when people say, why should we raise their minimum wage?
It's going to take...
They're not doing
line.
A job that requires... They're not... Whatever they're doing isn't worth... What, 11 or 12 or however many dollars
an hour. A livable wage.
Yeah.
So it's really funny.
So if you go back to that same person and say, okay, if we did raise the minimum wage to a higher level, would you want that job? No. No.
I'm happy with my white collar life. Yeah, no, of course they wouldn't. What do you know, are you familiar with the UK and their skilled labor shortage? Where carpenters are driving Ferraris?
What? No.
So like 10 years ago, this became a big problem over there. So the blue collar employment, like everyone got too educated over there because they're slightly more openly socialist.
It doesn't seem like it should be a problem.
But it is. It absolutely
everyone
is.
Everyone got too educated.
If I said it, much of the population.
Too skilled?
No. It's actually right. The opposite. So there was too much of an educated, like younger generation. Right? Because there's more of a socialist bent
okay.
There's more, you know, funding for college.
Okay.
University. So no one wanted to do the skilled blue-collar jobs, like carpentry and electricians.
Okay. So too many people went for the
white-collar
track.
Jobs. Right. So all of a sudden, getting a deck built cost you 100 grand or 100,000 pounds, whereas before it would cost you half of that because there was no one to do it. So the few people who did could charge where the fuck they wanted. Good for them. So the joke was, because I was talking to a Brit who was like begging us not to vote for George W. Bush again. And I was like, we didn't vote for him the first time. I don't know what to fucking tell you. We were drinking at a bar in New York. She was really cool. But she was telling us about this. And she's like, you know, we have our carpenters are driving Ferraris. Like, we're so out of whack. But your country, you don't. And she had a great, it was like, I wish I had recorded it. It was like a great rant monologue. She's like, you don't understand that. Even now, still, every country looks at the U.S. and wants to take their lead from you if you make the right decisions. And you are letting everyone in the world down. We were like, just talking to a bunch of like us waiters. And we're just like, we had just gone off a shift. We're like, we're sorry. We're not the people you should be telling this to. We're waiters. But, it's a busted ass system that needs the poor in place. It will always need to have the poor in place. So we will never elevate the living wage to a point where it endangers that. I'm telling you, it's systemic and it needs to be like that. If we're going to keep this facade of a democratic capitalist country, which is incredibly socialist, but no one seems to want to say that.
Yeah, we can't continue on this path. Something has to give.
It's
getting further and further out of balance.
Well, I think what we're going to see, I think we're actually going to see the uprising that our forefathers said would be the way you, you know, throw off the yoke of an oppressive government. And I think what's
going to... That's not going to be pretty.
No, it's not.
Because the oppressive government's really crazy powerful.
Well, I'm thinking of the African-American community. Because things have gotten, with the way the, you know, the police have been lately, like what's coming out and the run-ins... It's yeah. escalating in a way that is very alarming.
But the feds are kind of on the are getting more onto their side. Of, I mean, look,
the, just think okay,
in
just
Ferguson,
stop,
it was
stop,
it was
stop,
the feds,
stop, just
the
stop
Justice
and
Department
think about
that came
the way
in.
You said that.
I know.
There is absolutely an understandable anger that is simmering within the African American community.
Yes.
Because, and we've discussed this before on this podcast, we've never gotten past the slave owning mentality in this country completely. We've never surpassed it 100%, especially in the upper echelons of society.
All right. That's, yeah, I can go along with that.
I'm not saying people still want to have slaves. I'm saying that
yeah,
disparity, right? So, but, it's the same thing with like the affirmative action thing. It's like, well, if you just, you know, throw some jobs at a certain percentage, that's fixing the problem, right? Like we've always done these half-hearted things that really aren't addressing the systemic issues. And what we're seeing is something happened at some point or has always been there and just got covered up for better in the past before social media. But there is a real hatred of generally the police towards the African-American community. And it's really fucking scary.
Yes.
And what scares me is that, Liz, let me finish this. Mm-hmm. What scares me is that if the African-American community were to really rise up, like old school American forefathers style, where it's like shitty government, shitty bureaucracy, you rise up and defend yourself, you can't blame them.
No.
But if my kid gets killed in a riot, what side do I end up on? You know, it's a really fucked up situation. And that's the kind of thing that keeps me up at night.
The thing is, and I don't. I mean, this might be a hopeful way to look at this, and it's a
feel free
it's
to have
strange.
Hope.
I know it's strange for me to be the one coming in with a hopeful.
So one of us has to be.
What we've seen more recently is the federal government coming down on the side of the oppressed peoples. And I was saying specifically in Ferguson, mm-hmm. it was the feds and the Justice Department that came in and looked at everything and said. The Ferguson Police Department is seriously fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
And here's why. And this is all the stuff that's been happening. And I think that the conflict are mainly at the local level.
I agree. I'm actually not fingering the feds. I'm absolutely fingering the local level. But thanks to Homeland Security, the local level is now paramilitary in nature.
Yeah.
Without any training.
Yes. That is another problem.
That's a huge problem. This
yes,
is not...
we've given a lot of power to the police, a lot of like crazy
military power.
Gear.
Yeah, that they have no idea how to use.
Yeah.
I mean, correctly. They don't have the training for it correctly.
They know which end to point yeah. at the bad guys.
Well, that was interesting because I remember they got a military expert, like an ex-military, like an advisor. And they showed him a picture of, it was one of the more famous pictures of Ferguson where there was like just an African-American guy standing there, like hands up. And then like three extremely well-armed policemen running at him. I saw it a couple times at the time. And this guy was like, you know, let me explain to you what is wrong here. So see how they're all pointing with their guns. They're all running with their guns pointed at him.
Mm-hmm.
Like the first thing you learn in the military is you do not raise your firearm and point it at someone unless there is a very strong chance you're going to have to fire. You know what I mean? And let me tell you, I have personal experience with this. I have had a drunk cops pull guns on me because I was with African-American friends in New York City. So let me tell you.
Well,
when
tell this story.
I've told you on this.
You have?
Yeah, my two black friends and the two drunk cops at the bar.
I don't know if you have.
Okay, well, let me finish this and I'll tell that story.
Okay.
It's a kind of a funny story. But also, one of the first, like the first month I was in New York the first time living there, I was walking on my way to see Avenue Q. We were going to see the Broadway
yes.
show.
Mm-hmm.
And I was with two friends, and we were rounding a corner, and there was a SWAT team occupying a building for some reason. I don't know. I'll never forget this, because it was the height of lunacy. And this is like before I understood the military lack of training and armament of the police being a problem. We were rounding the corner, and there was this short, little, fat, fucking white cop armed to the gills with a massive assault rifle, no joke. He points it and looks through the scope. And the guy, I was with a college friend and her like boyfriend at the time. So he's walking in front and he stops right outside of the guy's firing range. Because the guy had it pointed, basically, if he had kept walking, it would be pointed at his head.
Yes. So, yeah, stopping is good.
So, stopping is great. So this fucking schlub is pointing an automatic rifle and isn't even looking at his surroundings because he's looking through the scope. And there's no reason for it. Obviously, whatever was happening was in the building behind him. And he's just pointing it out into the public. I mean, think of Spy. What if he sneezed at the moment one of the three of us walked by him? Or someone across the street was just walking. You know what I mean? Like, I will always remember that as being one of the stupidest fucking things I've ever seen in my life.
And terrifying.
When you're young, you're invincible.
Yeah.
So you just, you want to look down at the person and say, you're older than me and stupid. But yes, now...
Looking back on it,
it's terrifying. Yes. Especially if he had been really tall, it would have been less terrifying, because at least it would have been above my head. But no, I could have sworn I told this story. I've told it so many times. I was out with two African-American friends that we were all after shift at work. And we went out to a local bar. This is the Upper West Side. All right. You can't think of a more white bread, like just... not in a situation where you think your gun's going to get pulled on you, especially by police officers kind of situation. Okay.
This is just like up kind of west of the park?
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, so this is like Trump Tower area, right?
Oh, yeah. Like 15 blocks north of Trump Tower. Okay. Same avenue.
Okay.
It was either Jake's Dilemma or one of those bars. There was a couple bars we frequented. So we went out. We were just sitting there drinking, like just fucking chilling out, right? We had another friend who left early, so the three of us were going to leave. And these two guys at the bar stop us. And they're like, hey, guys, check this out. We want to do something. So they're like, they did that game you do where you like you say, think of a number, think of a color, think of something else. And they can tell you the fruit you're thinking of or the vegetable you're thinking of because there's like certain synaptic connections that are triggered. You ever seen that before? So it started out okay. We're like, all right, it's two drunk guys. They were both white. And then very quickly it escalated. Where, like, I got kind of cut out of the conversation entirely. And they were just talking to my two friends. And then they started to just sort of talk to the one guy who had dreadlocks and was darker skinned than the other.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, very quickly, he knew they were cops. Like, he just knew. Because he grew up in a very poor area. And that's what the conversation became. So it started out, like, jovial. And then it was, oh, well, you know, why do people in, you know, your neighborhood do this? Oh, well, why do people in your precinct do this? And then it was, why do you people do this? And why do you do this? I remember that. That the terminology changed as the conversation went on. It went from generalizations of their racism to very specifically this guy. This guy was a capoeira fighter. So it would have been really funny.
Probably not, because backup would have been called at some point.
And oh, well, it would have gone badly for him, as badly. Horribly, as unfair as it would have been, yes. But at least the short-term, you know, enjoyment of watching him destroy these two dudes. Anyway, so it's very tense, right? Like, these guys are literally blocking us from getting out of the bar. And we just wanted to leave. But my friend, to his credit, had been shaken down by the police in much worse situations and was not going to back down. And, you know, I applaud him for that. So so the cop goes, well, can you tell me where my gun is? And my friend goes, points right to it. I couldn't see it, but, you know, he just knew the bulge, how to recognize it. So the cop goes, oh, really good. And then he fucking whips out this 9mm. This guy's drunk. And he is just waving it. Like, we're all in the line of fire here. And, like, I literally did just one of those, like, po-face, like, oh, shit, like, hands up. Like, I don't know what the fuck I do right now. This is only the second time I've had a gun pulled on me. Both times in New York City. By cops. What the fuck? And that's when the bartender, I only saw the corner of my eye, but he jumped the bar and then swatted the guns out of their hands. And he looked at us. He's like, guys, I'm so sorry. Normally they come in all the time and I make them lock their guns in the safe till the next day. Like, and it got interesting after that because, like, they knew they had crossed the line. Like, the alcohol was definitely playing a part. So it ended with us all doing shots. And drinking. Like, they bought us a lot of drinks. But what's interesting was, because they felt bad, they kind of opened up about things that were surprising. And they said, you know, because of before Bloomberg, Pataki was the governor. I forgot who the mayor was. Whoever was before Bloomberg. They're like, he, you know, when Disney took over Times Square, they wanted a stronger police presence. So
with
they
Giuliani?
Giuliani, yeah.
Okay.
Giuliani. This was post 9/11. I don't know why I forgot that. So post 9/11, they wanted to up the police force significantly, like a 40%, 50% increase. So they really reduced the restrictions on who could become a cop. So they're like, yeah, there's a lot of ex-cons who are now New York City Police Department, like, you know, New York's finest. And that was really interesting because I had never heard that before.
And these were the cops telling you this.
Yeah, and I couldn't tell if they were ex-cons or not. But of course, the one thing I'm thinking is, well, these guys
drunkenly pulled guns on us. Yeah, it's best not to take a side after they say that.
After that, it's like, really?
They let those jerks in? I mean, that's interesting.
I mean, good for them to better themselves. The jerks? So I've had a slightly colored experience with local law enforcement and in a large city, but I am terrified because I don't think it can be fixed, and I don't see it ending well, and I see it boiling over, and it feels inevitable and justified. And I will not repeat those words when I or someone close to me gets hurt or killed in whatever happens, right? But it's like, I don't know how else to fix it.
Well, gotta do something. Gotta try, right?
Do you? What do you do? What do you do when the entire system is rigged?
I don't know.
Except rise up. So I guess I could just pick up a rock and start throwing.
I know. You gotta shove your hands into the machine and then stop the train and hug the kids so that they don't get.
Did that stop the train?
I don't know.
He got the kid.
I think
out.
It was an explosion that stopped the train.
Yeah, the explosion was, I'm pretty sure, is what also killed all of humanity.
Except for the two children.
Which were enough to repopulate, if you knew it.
There we go.
Yeah. It'd all be those really cute.
So you just need to make sure Simon is one of those kids.
Wait, so you're telling me. Hold on. Let's take a step
yes,
back.
Yes, Mike. I'm telling you, you need to find a girl. That's roughly his age.
No.
Kill everyone else, but make sure him and this girl.
No, we're going to take a step back because I want to point out how fucked up the thing
is. And it's going to cost you first an arm and then, I don't know, everything.
We're still out to the parts that I find the most disturbing here. So you want me to willingly give my kid to a megalomaniac to stick in a tiny compartment?
Briefly.
I have no guarantee of that. So he could basically, literally become a cog in the machine. Like,
briefly,
literally.
Temporarily.
And if he sneezes and his head goes the wrong way, he gets chopped off by the moving
gears. I mean, okay, well, no.
I'm just pointing out the issue I have here, Mike. Call me old-fashioned.
It's an allegory, Mike. It's just an allegory.
Oh, is it? Okay, well, that's fine.
Moxie Fruvis in the news.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, why?
You haven't heard this?
When
I didn't
do
even
I ever
hear this.
Keep up on
I know.
The news?
I didn't even hear this until I randomly stumbled across it today.
It's not going to be good.
It's not good.
I want it to be good.
It's awful.
Oh, fuck.
The lead singer from Moxie Fruvis, what is it? Gomeshi, I think.
I don't remember. He ate a child.
No, apparently allegedly he's been charged with several counts of sexual abuse. He's being the allegations are that he likes to get violent with women, kind of a strangly thing.
Ooh, Jesus Christ!
That he's got going, allegedly.
Borderline American Psycho.
Maybe, I don't know. I actually haven't seen it.
I found it disturbing.
Yeah,
I don't know.
It didn't appeal to me that much.
I have the book and I refuse to read it because it's even worse.
Anyway,
yeah,
that happened. I think it was like 20 something women
eventually
came out against him with allegations. He's only on trial for like three or four of them right now.
Right now.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not Bill Cosby. How did this take so long to get out?
It's kind of along those lines, except less rapey and more strangly.
No. I'm saying, like, Bill Cosby, you almost, like, can think, well, he has a lot of money and a lot of clout, so I could see why it took so long to come out. But, like, has this been going on? If it was 20 women, you would think he would have gotten busted for that.
And he's done a lot of stuff, and it wasn't like he was just in Moxie Fruvis. He's been working in different positions and as a manager Various things through the CBC, Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, yeah, or whatever it is. So he's not just some guy who used to be in a band. I mean,
that's immediately what I thought. Okay.
No, he has more power, more notoriety than that.
That makes sense, though. Okay.
It's kind of a big deal in Toronto, or in Canada right now. The trial just started this month. It ended. The jury, I don't think it's a jury trial. I think it's like a magistrate or something is deciding it. I don't know. I don't know how it works there.
Does he sit on the Game of Thrones?
They have a leprechaun who pulls something out of a hat, and that's the... I don't know
how it works. And then they have a joust, right, to figure out the magistrate's the size.
Joust is the tiebreaker. Joust is always just the tiebreaker.
Oh, okay. May the gods decide!
But yeah, it's bad. And apparently the prosecution did a really terrible job. So the analysis is that people are saying that they think he did it, but there's a good chance he's not going to be held accountable for it in this instance.
Well,
so it's just shitty all around.
So I know the double indemnity saves you, in the U.S. at least, from being tried for the same crime to the same person. But if there's like 20 women, then they can just keep taking him to court.
I don't know. Maybe. I'm just coming up with different things to bum people out.
Yes.
I bummed out my wife with it earlier because she's Canadian. Dude, and she's a big Moxie Fruvis fan. Well,
Moxie Fruvis is great.
I know. But now you're always going to think of this whenever you hear them.
I am going to think of that.
And I've just ruined... Smike ruins Moxie Fruvis.
Maybe that should be the podcast title.
Ending on a happy note. Was I going to ruin something else now? We ruined Uber. You ruined the democratic system in the U.S.
And the New York City Police Department.
Ruined Moxie Fruvis. What else can we ruin real quick here? Is there anything else?
Shit, I'm going to be out of...
We ruined Florida, pretty much.
Yeah, we started off just fucking wrecked off them early.
Florida. I don't know.
Dunzo. Well, I look forward
George Takei hawking Taco Bell.
What is up?
Come on, man.
What do they call it? The Quesarito?
I don't know. It's some stupid made-up name, obviously.
Well, everything in Taco Bell is some stupid made-up.
Well, it's obviously half of quesadilla, right, half of something else.
Quesalupa? I think it's the Quesalupa. Yeah, it's half
so
chalupa,
stupid.
half quesadilla.
And there's George Takei. Like, man, now I have to try one.
So you wouldn't have had to try one if George Takei wasn't involved? You know, he voiced a villain on Bubble Guppies for an episode. Are you going to watch Bubble Guppies?
What? Yeah, I don't even know what that is.
It's like a super young show my kid likes. It's about mer children.
Not selling me on it.
Dude, no kid show makes any sense to an adult. Like, I sit there and I watch
these. Is this like Teletubbies
shows
level where it's just kind of people hopping around and singing occasionally?
No.
You got to be singing though, right? They're singing.
Oh, there's always singing.
Yeah.
No, they actually have the worst songs of like all the shows he watches. They use the same one song and rewrite it every time. Like I start to really critique these shows.
Maybe you should just be doing a children's show because it sounds really easy.
It is so fucking easy. So what you do is you tell up front what skills the kid's gonna like develop, and then you just do the same thing every time you do a show. So that they have the exact same formula for every show. Like from the jokes, like the pattern of the jokes is identical. And like, there's always they play pretend, they do a pretend story, and then there's a monster or animal in it that everyone is afraid of, and then they never give it a chance, and they talk to it, and it's really not that bad. Like, just the same fucking thing. It must be so easy to make kids shit. So easy. I knew a woman, so I worked with a bartender in New York City in Brooklyn, who her mom was a prolific children's book author. How many children's books do you think she had written?
Prolific?
Prolific.
Okay, the word prolific, I would say a dozen or more.
200.
200?
She had written
In one lifetime?
And she was still kicking last I heard.
Oh my
god. Over 200 gosh. Children's books.
How? Prolific.
Because it's not that hard. It's not hard to write a children's book. I've read them. I think it's harder to find an artist that somehow connects with kids. Because, dude, the Goodnight Moon, I don't know what the fuck's going on in that book. Simon loves it right now. I'm like, I can't. I'm looking at this and I feel like I'm looking at a fucking impressionist painting. Is that a rabbit knitting? What is going on here? Is the fireplace have a face in it? I can't fucking tell.
It's like I don't know if this is true. I'm going to assume it is for the sake of entertainment.
But that's fair.
Did you ever, when you were younger, read any of the Nancy Drew or Hardy Boys books?
All of them.
Okay. You probably
old and
are
new series of Hardy
familiar
Boys.
With this then.
Okay.
The legend was that they were all written as an assembly line and different people were assigned specific chapters. And it was just not written by a single person, but each chapter
was... Franklin W. Dix or whatever?
Was no, what?
I forgot the author's name.
Yeah, so it was so formulaic that, okay, here's your chapter to write, and this is this character's name, this character's name, this is the ghost or the thing that they're looking for.
Right.
And like Mad Libs assembly line, they just churn it out.
Shit, I can believe that, because they were like... at least 100 Hardy Boys books. Shit. And then probably just as many Nancy Drew. And they were all the same. They did crossovers and it was like a normal book. It like it didn't matter.
Be like, they just add a couple more names.
They did. It's like, oh, now there's a Nancy instead of just Chet. Okay. Well, they have an extra friend along for the...
So yeah, Google that because I remember hearing that.
I can believe that.
And I can believe it too.
Man, I read so many Hardy Boys books. You ever read Boxcar Children? That was probably after your childhood.
That sounds kind of familiar. I don't know.
The kids who... they only lived in a boxcar for part of the first book, and then they lived with their rich grandfather for the rest of the 30 books. But it was the Boxcar Children books. And then so the funny thing about that is she died, Gertrude Chandler Warren, I think was her name. Whoever the writer was, she died after like book 9, and they just kept going. And I don't think anyone could tell the difference.
All right. So
we've ruined childhood books.
Childhood books and TV shows. Anything else we want to...
Everything you eat and drink is trying to kill you.
Yeah.
That's just scientifically proven.
Yeah, look, whatever you're eating and drinking, look on it. If it says corn syrup, you're fucked.
You're fucked.
If it's plastic,
it probably has BPA.
It probably says corn somewhere.
Yep. You almost can't. Or soy, but yeah. Corn.
I think
the air is toxic. And we don't have enough of a ozone layer, so the sun's giving...
Oh, and somebody's selling air!
Oh, yeah, yes! That's right! Two wacky ass British chicks are selling air, and they
yes,
sold...
we gotta finish on this. The air you breathe,
oh my god,
is a scam.
It is Spaceballs. That's what's so amazing about it. The canned air scene from Spaceballs. You remember that?
I don't remember that.
So President Scrooge, I don't know what it was. Mel Brooks, like he like has cans of purified air because on their planet they've ruined it, so the air is bad. So he opens a can of air and he's like. and that's essentially what this is. They, you know, what their number one like importer is for these this bottled air, right?
China.
Yeah,
yeah. This and I, you told me about this, and I told you I was in that play.
Oh, that's
it
right.
It was
yeah.
a play by Ben Elton, who, he's done a bunch of stuff.
Okay.
I think he wrote for the Young Ones, and he's written a bunch of stage plays.
Okay.
Slightly, really good.
Slightly absurdist.
Yeah, slightly absurdist British. Good stuff.
So British, yeah. Good point.
Yeah. A little redundant there. He wrote this play called Gasping, which I was in. And the premise was that this company had found a way to suck in and bottle designer air.
Right.
And they end up basically bottling all of the breathable air in the world and killing almost everyone. I think they do kill everyone at the end.
Nice.
No, I just spoiled the play. Yeah, I ruined the play that I was in. There
we go. That is a downer play.
It was a downer play.
But if you want to get your jollies in a little bit of Schadenfreude, definitely watch the video of these two women. Have you seen the video?
No, I'll have to watch that.
They're running around. So they're in the English countryside, and they're running around with nets, on like butterfly nets.
Are you kidding?
I'm not joking. They're with little tiny butterfly nets. And they, or something that looks like them. Maybe they're plastic bags, but they are net, like the long handle and the little loop. And they're running around, literally catching the air. And then they go up to these little nice glass jars and they like, you shake a bag to get everything out of it. They kind of do that into the jar and then they quickly seal it.
Is this like an advertising commercial for them?
It was like in Business Insider was doing a story on them.
But they weren't doing it as a joke. They were.
I don't know. They could be
selling this stuff.
They could be. I don't know. But it's funny as fuck to watch. Because you're like, you want to just despise everything about them, but you're like, you know, they're not They're not lying about what they're doing, according to the video. They are straight up catching and bottling the English countryside and sending it to China. They've sold over 100 bottles of this at like over 100 pounds a piece. And I'm pretty sure that's a lot more than $100 a piece. So, yeah, that's the world we live in. By the way, us buying all this cheap shit made in China is why Chinese people are buying bottled air. Ultra downer.
Ah. Blaze in Space is a stolen dress entertainment production.
Hold on. Do it depressed.
I thought I was. No. Not depressed enough.
After that podcast, you can do more depressed.
Buddies in Space is a stolen dress entertainment production.
You just sound tired. I just kicked your puppy.
Buddies in Space. And now I just sound... Do you want depressed? Do you want sad? Do you want horrified?
I want morose. I want, like, just the pits of despair. Emo. Don't even try to escape. Right. Yeah, but not Kylo Ren emo.
Buddies in Space is a stolen dress entertainment production.
Not doing it for me.
All right. You did do it for me. Give me a line reading, sir.
No, that's the most insulting thing you can do to an actor.
And now we're going to ruin acting. There.
Buddies in Space is a stolen dress entertainment production.
I can barely hear you now.
Stolen dress is a fuck, I said it wrong.
You suck. You're a terrible director. You've ruined directing for me. Gave me no motivation. Buddies in Space is a stolen dress entertainment production. Buddies in Space is a member of the Stolen Dress Entertainment Podcast Network. Visit stolendress.com to check out other Stolen Dress podcasts, blogs, tweets, videos, and books.
I just realized we never introduced the podcast.
We are Buddies in Space.
You are?
S. Michael Smith, and you are?
And Michael Carassi. We've been Buddies in Space the whole time.
Yes. Fooled you. If you thought you were listening to...
The Nerdist.
Ha! Hopefully you realized that early on, but maybe you didn't, so awesome.
Hey, dumbass, if you thought you were listening to The Nerdist the whole time, you're dumb.
But we still appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for listening. You know, feel free to give us a like or whatever, but you're dumb. But, you know, you should listen to our other podcasts.
They're less depressing than this.
For the most part.
For the most part.
There's a few. We like to sprinkle in the depression here and there.
But go watch Spy. That was good.
It was fun. Spy will make all of this okay. So how's the packing going? Are you just totally screwed? Or?
No. I was mainly feeding snakes tonight. Eat my brain.